This podcast is made possible by the generosity of supporting members. Please visit dharmaocean.org to learn more about becoming a supporting member. You are listening to the Dharma Ocean podcast. In this talk, Reggie addresses Winter Datun retreatants who are entering into the third week of a month-long meditation retreat. He encourages them to honor the practice of silence so as to more fully abide in the depths of being. This talk was given at the 2005 Winter Datun Retreat, held in Crestone, Colorado.
I want to talk a little bit this morning in terms of the next, by my calculation, 10 days or 11 days that we have to make the next leg of this journey. From a certain point of view, you could say that the past 2 weeks have been preparation for this period, in the sense that we've been kind of gathering all the parts of ourselves into the process. But, you know, now we have this unique opportunity to go further. And I want to, you know, suggest how we can do that and invite you to be fully here and participate. You know, when you do a retreat, there are many stages, and there's the preparation, there's the entry, there's the settling, there's the gathering all the parts of ourselves into the process. If you tighten things up too quickly, parts of ourselves get excluded, and that's not, you don't want to do that. So there's all that process that is necessary. But at a certain point, you've done the work, and you're ready to take the next step, and that's where we are now. You know, you could compare it to a voyage of a ship, where, if you know anything about the history of sailing in the last 400 years, a huge amount of preparation goes into before you even leave the harbor. And then you actually sail out of the harbor, and then you're in, you know, territorial water for a while, which is where we've been. But then you get out in the open ocean, and this is where we are now. And there's, you know, basically, I would describe the next 10 or 11 days as an opportunity to deepen. And we're going to be practicing a lot of silence, and we're going to be kind of just checking to make sure we don't have any big leaks in the sailing vessel, so things can be easy. So I'm just going to lay this out for you, and we can maybe talk about it a little bit. First of all, today we're going to be collecting ourselves, and there's some new folks with us, and it's going to, you know, take a little bit of arranging. So we're going to have functional talking, and basically what I'd like you to do is just, you know, we have these badges now, noble silence, which in the tradition, the Sanskrit, is Arya Tushanim Bhavana. It means the practice of noble silence, or basically connecting with the noble silence. There's ordinary silence, which is just simply not speaking. But then there's the noble silence, which is actually the silence of the mind. And I want to encourage you to explore this practice fully. This is a very unique opportunity, which we haven't really been practicing silence at that level as of yet in the Datun. So I'd like you to observe functional talking, which is not using relationships as a way to offload your anxiety and your fear. My intention is, now that we're in Crestone, which is a very silent space, it's the space itself is silent in a way that I personally have never experienced in my teaching. eventually in the next few years, I want week three to be, or the 10 days that begin with the beginning of week three to be 10 days of silence. But this year we're going to experiment. We'll just do, you know, 3.5 and see. And we might extend if people, you know, you may feel strongly that you want to continue a little bit further, and that would be fine. You know, we'll just see. Noble silence also includes, and I want to say this once again, because I don't, this is an area where we've been leaking quite a bit. Noble silence means that you're not writing notes, you're not reading, you're not journaling. You're really letting your mind rest in a state where whatever comes up, rather than offloading it through communicating or reading or distracting yourself, you're allowing the space for the energy to come up and find its own fruition. So silence is a space in which we actually allow our state of being the fullest possible room to arise out of the emptiness, to display itself, and to go through its own process. Now, here's the incredible challenge for all of us here. As we've been talking about, so much of our communication, and by the way, noble silence also includes gesticulating. There have been, even during periods of silence, there's been a lot of kind of this kind of thing, and, you know, sign language, that's still speaking. That's not noble silence. I think that, in some traditions, you actually keep your gaze down and you don't meet the gaze of other people. We don't do that here. There's really a sense of being present and opening and receiving others, but not using the situation to offload our desire for confirmation. If you look at the note writing, the gesticulating, the speaking, you know, in this environment, you begin to notice, you know, with all due respect, it's true of all of us, that almost everything that we do is an attempt to find confirmation for ourselves. Do you know what I'm saying? We have anxiety, and we want to reach out to people, and we want to, even if we're supposedly helping them, it's actually about us. It's really not about them. It's about us, and it's about our desire to be confirmed. And maybe we want to be confirmed that we're okay. Maybe we want to be confirmed that people like us. Maybe we want to be confirmed that what we're doing is okay. You know, whatever it may be, you know, there are all kinds of different kinds of confirmation that we're actually looking for. But the problem with seeking confirmation is we're not seeking confirmation of our true self. We're seeking confirmation for our ideas about ourself. Unfortunately, seeking confirmation and gaining it, we actually lose ourselves in that moment. And this is why in the tradition, so many of the great meditators and, you know, men and women throughout this whole tradition have spent a lot of time in silence. Sometimes we think about these people and we feel, well, they're just these special people. You know, they're these like great meditators and great people of realization. Of course, they're not really like us. The thing that we have to realize is they are exactly like us, and they face exactly the same problems that we do. So when they practice silence, it's not easy for them. I mean, like, you know, Milarepa, he really wanted people to like him. He was a very warm, passionate person, and he really wanted other people to like him, and he wanted to know that what he was doing was okay, and he wanted to know that, you know, that he was a good person and can be confirmed by other people. But he also understood that by not working with that desire for confirmation, he was actually sacrificing his true self, and he was cutting his own throat. And so he went into retreat, and he practiced a tremendous number of years in silence. So silence is an opportunity for our true self to be born and for us to find out actually what's truly going on within us and to discover the life that we need to live. That's why we practice silence. It's not to be good. It's not to, you know, be these good little Buddhists wandering around and doing what they're supposed to. It has nothing to do with that. It has to do with actually being willing to hold everything that we are. It's a commitment to ourselves that is reflected in the practice of noble silence. So I encourage you to do this practice with a whole heart and to work with your fear, your anxiety about not doing the usual thing with other people. If you can conquer that fear and that neediness about having others confirm oneself, then you can bring that out into your ordinary life, and you will find that even when you speak with others, the neediness is actually greatly diminished. And the agenda of trying to get confirmation from other people is greatly diminished. And when you speak with people, after we finish this retreat and you go back and you begin to use your speech, if you have truly conquered your own inner fear of being alone, then your speech is so much more genuine and it's so much more open, and you can communicate with other people in a way where there's real exchange, and it's not you coming and making this sort of implicit demand that we usually do when we talk to other people, is, you know, please confirm me and tell me I'm okay. You know, that my version of reality is actually okay. We won't need to do that, and that is such a relief. And then communication, rather than becoming this life or death thing, which it is for most of us, most of the time for most of us, when we communicate with other people, it's life and death. My ego's at stake. That life and death thing is taken out of it, and then there's a real sense of connecting with people and being free of our own neediness. I mean, wouldn't that be amazing to be free of that and not to have that black cloud always over us every time we engage other people? It's joyful. And this is why the practice of noble silence in this kind of retreat is it's a unique opportunity to explore that kind of space. When we know and learn how to be alone in that way, then we can truly be with others without compromising our freedom, our inner freedom. So, once again, we'll, you know, from lights out tonight and at least until Friday noon, we'll practice noble silence. And I encourage you, you know, not to be doing the note thing. I mean, if you absolutely need some functional reason to communicate with someone, that's fine. You can do that through notes, but, you know, just be mindful that the note thing can turn into just a substitute for, you know, speaking. I would also encourage you not to do any writing, journaling, reading, and the physical thing of, you know, being all over people. Because I know during silence, a lot of people who are very strongly feel a lot of warmth for others, there's just an increased amount of hugging, touching, all that kind of stuff. If it's spontaneous, it's fine. But again, please be mindful not to use that as a substitute for talking, because it ends up being talking. You might as well be talking. Questions? Yes?
What about?
I would let it go. Yeah, playing musical instrument by yourself. We're talking about real silence. We're talking about the silence of the mind. We're talking about letting go of all the habitual things that we would normally do to distract ourselves from the basic space. Yes? I think writing down notes is okay. I think, you know, there are two exceptions, really. Even Kensa Rinpoche, when he was, you know, he was this person who was in retreat for, I don't know, 12 or 14 years. And he had a vow of silence himself, but, you know, he did give teaching periodically during that time. I mean, there were long times when he didn't, but... So one thing is that, you know, I'm going to be giving talks, which I'll say something about in a minute. And the other thing is taking notes. You know, that's okay. That's fine. And then again, in the kitchen, I'm encouraging the kitchen situation that there's not conversation when you're in there doing dishes. I mean, try to maintain your silence. And this this tag here is actually very helpful to wear. You know, you could say, well, you know, we all know we're in silence. Why do we have to wear tags? Because it's a reminder constantly. And when you meet someone and they have this tag on, and you see that, it's just kind of an extra reminder that my Sangha brother or sister is actually practicing silence. And then even today, if you feel inspired to do so, you could put your tag on and not talk. You know, so you can always do that as we create the space. So any questions, other questions on silence? Yes. I think, you see, I leave this up to you. I think natural human expressions you know, of warmth, of smiling, of sadness, you know, laughing, crying. When it arises of its own accord, it's fine. But I think you all know that there's also another way in which all that can be done, and it's an attempt to overcome our loneliness. So I leave it up to you. But just be mindful of the fact that if I say, sure, you can, you know, physical gestures and expression are fine, the problem with that is it goes over into the area of substitute speech. But a smile that arises, a sense of a connection, you know, meeting someone's gaze, of course, that's absolutely fine, no problem. But just be mindful of starting to use that kind of situation as a way to begin talking again, even though you're not using words. Do you know what I'm saying? Is this making sense? We're not talking about shutting down. I want you to understand that. We're talking about opening up. And the thing is, when we open up around other people and we're not doing the habitual thing, it's actually scary. Isn't that true? When you're with someone and you're not talking and you're not doing the neurotic thing, there's just this open space. And even around our best friend, it can make us really, really nervous. Do you know what I'm talking about? It's really true. So that's what we're exploring. And that's what when we say it's more openness between people during the practice of silence, this is exactly what we're talking about. The openness means that we're not shutting the space down, we're leaving it open. It's very, very interesting, and it's not going to be easy. What I'm asking is not going to be easy. I acknowledge that. Yeah, I wouldn't do any reading at all. We're really talking about letting it go. You know what I'm saying? Whatever it may be. Dharma, words, you know, all that stuff. Just let it go and see what happens. Even on retreat, you have to actually take this vow, because on retreat, after a couple days, you're making your fire in the morning and you find yourself actually reading the newspaper. And one time I was on retreat and I was reading the newspaper with incredible interest. And the newspaper was like 10 years old. And I found myself reading the advertisements and just being so completely... And then I suddenly realized, wait a minute, hold it, what are you doing? So this is it's a practice, and you'll have to work on it. And I'm not saying that everybody's going to be perfect. No, not at all. But you have to work on it. You'll have to see, you know, a lot of when we take a precept, which is basically what's going on here with the silence, you begin to realize how you kind of drift off, and you make a lot of discoveries about how you actually can't do it. And then you bring yourself back, and then you go to a deeper level. So I encourage you to, you know, explore this practice. Yes? Inner dialogue? Well, I would say the purpose of the practice of silence is to make us more aware of the incessant quality of the inner dialogue. And then, of course, we can start to work with that. But, I mean, you know, asking us to turn off the inner dialogue is probably not realistic at this point. Later it is, actually, believe it or not. When you do Vajrayana practice, then you're given practices so that the inner dialogue becomes the object of your attention and your practice. But at this point, what we're trying to do is really all of the things I've been mentioning. So don't hold yourself accountable for the inner dialogue. Just work with it, see it. It'll become actually heightened through the practice of silence. And talking to oneself, you know, it just happens, so I wouldn't worry about it.
Can you say the inner dialogue?
Inner dialogue? You stare at it. You stare at the thoughts that come up. Rather than the thoughts come up and you're off thinking about the thoughts, you actually look directly at the thoughts. Now, there's a whole body of teaching on what I just said, and if you come to the Mahamudra program someday, that's exactly one of the main things we'll talk about, is how you actually work with thoughts when they come up. But for the time being, I think the most important thing is just to notice them and see what's coming up. The more you look into thoughts, the more you find out. You know, thoughts are very, very interesting. You might think that thoughts are sort of neutral. They're not neutral. Thoughts are coming, discursive thinking is part of the ego's self-maintenance structure. And you can see the sticky, kind of tacky, yucky, slightly nauseating thing that the ego does is reflected in the thoughts that come up. And you really want to get to know those thoughts. You're not trying to get rid of them, but you're trying to see what they really are. So, I mean, I'm glad you brought this up, because in the space that we're talking about here, as our mind settles, the thoughts become more clear and we can really look into them and we can see what they're doing. Why did this thought arise? Now, you can't ask yourself that, but you can look. It's kind of like, you know, when someone is lying to you and you have a funny feeling and you look at them and you can see in their faces a lack of genuineness. There's something fake and phony. And I'm not talking about overt lying, but I'm talking about somebody who's not presenting themselves as they are. You can actually see it. You see that sort of yucky thing happening, coming at you. And that's what we have to do with our own thoughts. We have to learn to see them and recognize that quality. We're not trying to get rid of them, we're just trying to see them as they are. And when thoughts are recognized as they are and we see the questionable intention with which they arise, they just disappear. They cannot maintain themselves. So it's just, you know, as usual, it's seeing things that actually creates the open space and the freedom. You know, obviously when we're working with our thought process, we need to take a very neutral attitude towards thoughts. There are no good thoughts and bad thoughts. Did you know that? They're all the same. All thoughts need to be allowed to vanish into the emptiness of the sky.
To download more of Reggie's teachings, find out about upcoming retreats, and to explore a variety of audio listening guides to assist you on your spiritual journey, please visit dharmaocean.org. Music is by Jeff Beal and Nawang Ketchog from the album Tibet, Cry of the Snow Lion.